Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues, the last day of the year. It's hard to believe. Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman join me in studio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Ready here.
Stereo.
I tell you what.
We planned that.
Yes. We're all anxious to hear, Walker, I know you are too, Ed's resolution for the new year.
My resolution for the new year?
Yeah, what's your
resolution? No resolutions.
No resolutions?
I resolve.
You were telling me, though, that you resolved back several weeks ago on a diet.
Oh, this is a couple months ago.
Yeah.
I've been on,
Because a lot of people start their diets tomorrow.
Yes, I started mine before Thanksgiving.
What a man.
What a man. Exactly.
Ahead of schedule.
Just like the Daniel Boone song comes to mind. A rip roaring his fightness. No, eating this. Maybe eating. Rip roaring his eating this, man. No, I got this this app on my phone. It's called Loser. Hey, you loser. Or something. No, called Lose It. And keeps up with all my calories. So I've done 52 straight days. No, 55. I'm 55 straight days. The only time I broke it was a couple days over Christmas, and I will break it tonight.
Yeah.
I told my wife we're getting pizza. It's been a while since I've had pizza. So I know our listeners are just hanging on every word I'm saying. But
everybody has a New Year's tradition of some type. I mean, we do Asian restaurant.
We were talking before the show. I love Asian food.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool New Year's.
We've been doing that for about 30 years, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Walker?
He's too young to have traditions.
No traditions.
Yeah, I don't do resolutions. I don't set myself up to fail.
Oh, hey, that's a fist bump right there.
Man. I've learned that lesson.
That is already a young man of experience.
What's the proverb about not being lukewarm? You either need to be hot or cold.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's from the book of Revelation.
So I don't set myself up to halfway do something.
So. Yeah. This is the first New Year at your house, Walker, with the twins.
Yeah.
Now,
first Christmas and first New Year.
Do you stay up until midnight to watch the New
Year
thing?
No. No, my wife and I were talking. We were thinking, well, why don't we just find something fun to do with, like, some friends?
Uh-huh.
But when you got three kids,
there's not fun for anybody.
Fun days are over.
And who are we gonna send the kids off to? You know, so one grandparent, my parents are out of town, and then Lexi's grandparents have been watching my nephew. For Lexi's brother's son for a couple of days, so we're gonna keep the kids to ourselves, and we may or may not be up when the clock hits midnight.
Uh-huh.
Oh, listen, it's been so long since my wife and I have done that. I don't even care anymore.
No,
you know what? I'm just glad the power doesn't go off and you know the electricity's on, and I'm not gonna stay up till midnight to watch the
I will watch. Drop. I'll watch the coverage of New York City.
Mm.
You know, I'll watch it till bedtime.
Yeah.
Because they have all the pre-coverage.
Yes.
Well, how old are you, Walker?
26.
26?
Yeah.
You have already learned valuable lessons.
Yeah.
I mean, just that about not setting yourself up for failure.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yep. So. I've been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Especially with the worst thing is the workout plans and the the eating, the dieting.
Yeah.
Which so many, I mean, let's face it. One of the favorite big box stores that we go to before Christmas, when you walked in the door, it was cakes and cookies.
Oh, yeah.
On the left-hand side. We walked in, what was it, yesterday or the day before, and it was a whole wall of diet stuff. That's what it was, you know. Before Christmas, just binge. And now afterwards, we're going to make you feel guilty. Here's a bunch of diet stuff. Yeah. We just walk quickly right by that.
That's absurd. The amount of food that is here between Thanksgiving, I'm talking about here at AFA and AFR, between Thanksgiving and Christmas is absolutely absurd.
Yes.
I mean, the cookies and the pies and the cakes. There was a cake sitting out there yesterday. And it was very difficult for me to stay on this diet all through there.
I bet it was.
Because people were bringing all kinds of awesome food. It was really difficult, but yeah, I'm just a man of self-discipline.
Enjoy that pizza tonight.
Oh yeah. I'll just say this last thing and then we'll get to some serious stuff. I promise, folks. pizza's one of those foods. When I get started, just get out of my way, because I'm not one of those guys going to eat two pieces of pizza, and then that's it.
Yeah,
I'm going to go have an apple.
Oh no, no, I can't imagine that about you, Ed.
Yeah. Oh well, thank you. All right. Okay, so folks, we have a number of a couple of guests coming for the show. Before we introduce our first guest, I do want to let you know that if you want to take a look at these three fine specimens of American male manhood, and we got one who's Canadian.
Yeah, there you go.
You can go to Facebook or YouTube, and you can search for today's issues and click through, and you can watch the live stream of this program. If you don't want to do that, and I got to say, honestly, I don't blame you, because we're not exactly, you know, Tom Selleck here. None of us are GQ models. Walker's pretty good looking guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can see people.
Well, he's 26.
If you want to just listen to the show, you can. Obviously, some of you are listening on terrestrial radio. You can do a little traveling here over the next hour and a half. You can download the AFR app and listen on your phone or other portable device. Or if you're just around the house and you want to listen online, you can go to AFR.net and hear the live stream for that. All right. Well, we killed the first 10 minutes of the program, first 5 minutes of the program, talking about meaningless New Year's resolutions. So let's continue talking about meaningless stuff with Dr. Frank Turek, whose hosts of Cross Examines heard Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time and Sundays at 4 p.m. Central Time. I'm just going to call you Dr. Frank Turek here as we introduce you. And from now on, it's Frank. Do you welcome to the program. And do you do any New Year's resolutions, Frank?
Yeah, I'll never be on this show again.
We can make that happen. No, listen, you're one of our most popular guests on today's issues. So no New Year's resolutions. You don't do that?
No, not really. I think I try and limit myself to four slices of pizza. That's about that's what I'll do.
All right. All
right there, Ed. What about you?
No, we were just talking about the believe me, the people listening don't want to hear all that again. I can just tell
they
you.
Don't?
No, no. Hey, listen, Fred, what do we want to talk to Frank about? We have actually pretty serious stuff going on within the evangelical community. Let's drag Frank into this.
A lot of headlines being made in news agencies over the last couple of weeks as a result of an editorial written by Mark Galley, editor, I think outgoing editor of Christianity Today, where basically he took the gloves off against President Trump and said he agreed with the Democrats that he should be impeached. And he finds the president's behavior deplorable. And going back a few years, this is not the first time he was critical of President Trump. This is what he wrote shortly after. This is Mark Galley, shortly after President Trump was put into office. And he was most upset with the evangelicals who helped put Trump in office. He said he had this to say: "I know hardly anyone, let alone any evangelical Christian, who voted for Trump." Now, there's something interesting. You know, he doesn't know anybody who voted for Trump.
Right.
And he's the editor of a Christian magazine. "I describe evangelicals like me as elite evangelicals." He thinks he's an elite evangelical. "And this class of evangelicals has discovered that we have family members so different they seem like aliens in our midst. These other evangelicals often haven't finished college. And if they have jobs, and apparently a lot of them don't, they are blue-collar jobs or entry-level work. They don't write books or give speeches. They don't attend conferences of evangelicals for social justice or evangelicals for immigration reform. They are deeply suspicious of mainstream media. A lot of them voted for Donald Trump." End quote.
Frank, I got to tell you, that's one of the most arrogant things I've heard in a long, long time. And for it to come from Mark Galley, who I've met personally and had conversations with, the editor of Christianity Today, founded, I think it was founded by Billy Graham, Evangelical Association. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure I've ever heard anything that arrogant coming from someone claiming to be a Christian.
Yeah, and it's odd because we can all agree that Trump is arrogant, and here he is complaining that Trump is immoral, and he is in many ways in some of his behavior, but that comment there from him, if it's not out of context, I don't know the original context, you probably do, Fred, but it really does seem like he's calling the kettle black. Yeah. You know, he's doing the same thing that he's complaining Trump is doing. And I read his article here about having Trump removed. It's a well-written article, but it just doesn't meet the standard of impeachment. I mean, the claim that what Trump did is impeachable, in my view, is ridiculous. It's not impeachable. You may not like Trump. You may agree that his crude behavior is something that is unbecoming of the office, as I do in many cases. But that's no reason to kick him out of office. And it just seems to me that what's missing here and what nobody really ever talks about is, as Christians or just as even as non-Christians, as citizens of the United States, what is the purpose of the presidency? When we go in and vote for president, what are we voting for? Now, we hope a president will have a good bedside manner, but that's not the primary reason we vote for a president. The primary reason we vote for a president is to protect innocent people from evil. That's why we vote for a president or a government at all. In fact, Paul talks about this in Romans 13, that the leader doesn't bear the sword for nothing. The reason we have a government is to protect innocent people from evil. As James Madison famously said in Federalist 51, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. We need some form of government to protect innocent people from getting hurt. In other words, we're voting for a president primarily for his policies, not his personality. But I think that Christians like Mark Galley think that if a guy doesn't have a personality that's quote unquote Christian, then we can't vote for him. I don't think that's true. I think right. I wish he had a better personality. I wish his demeanor was better. But if I have to have a choice between demeanor and policy, I'm going to go right. with policy every time.
Yeah.
Frank, I have a theory, and I want to run it by you. We have, I think, what's developed amongst us is an evangelical left,
mm-hmm.
and they complain a lot about President Trump's personality. But here's mm-hmm. my theory. They like to throw that out there because they know it's popular with the mainstream media.
Yeah.
But what they're really against is President Trump's policies, because they like to say Trump is anti-immigrant. Well, he's not anti-immigrant, and he's not anti-refugee. That's what the Democrats like to say. He wants to secure our southern border. He wants to reduce the number of refugees coming in from terrorist sponsoring nations, etc. He's very pro-Israel. All of those things, and so they know they might get in trouble for criticizing those policies outright with their constituents. And so they throw the personality thing out there, and it's kind of a smokescreen for what I think is their real problem with Trump, and that's his policies.
Yeah,
I think you're right about that, Fred. In fact, when I read, and I've been reading evangelical writers who are against Trump, in fact, I was reading some of them this morning, and what I see them not talking about enough is the policies, or are the policies that Trump is putting forth. They don't seem to have much trouble with those, although they'll say things like, well, we shouldn't separate families at the border. Okay, I can agree we shouldn't if that's possible. But it was Obama that started that, and right. probably for good reason. What yeah. are you going to do when you get people who are illegally coming across the border? And I don't know all the details here, but there may be a good reason that you have to put children and parents in separate places while you're trying to adjudicate their claim.
Yeah.
And nobody ever talks about the details here. They just throw this out as if it's undeniable. There's no other way of doing this, or there could be other ways of doing this, and we just haven't figured it out yet. They never talk about the fact that this was put into place probably for some good reason by the Obama administration, and yeah. They make it seem like Trump is doing all this and he's evil.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, Frank, the our government doesn't know whether it's their actual biological child or not. I mean, these people could be child trafficking, and then we're all saying, "Well, keep them together." So you want to keep the child trafficker with the children in the same cell together? So there's no way to know oftentimes whether it's someone's biological child or not. But nonetheless, Frank, I think one of the things that's being missed here is the whole reason we got Donald Trump. I think the reason we got Donald Trump is because our country has been sending people to Washington, D.C. for decades, and they get there and they don't do anything. They don't, at least they don't do anything they say they're going to do. And so I think Donald Trump is the result of frustration, not just within evangelicals, but within a lot of voters, of where we've had this Washington, D.C. crowd that we keep sending up there. And many of them say the right things. George Bush might have said the right things on the campaign trail. Mitt Romney might have said the right things. But a lot of people and a lot of Christians thought, well, Donald Trump, if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be him.
Yeah, well, during the primaries, I didn't vote for Trump. I mean, at the time I was a Ted Cruz guy. I thought he lined up most with my values and policies, and his personality was right and all that, I thought. But I knew that if Trump did get in, that if there was ever somebody that could take a 2x4 to Washington and slap them upside their heads, it would be him.
Exactly.
And largely he's been able to do that, not with great success, but with at least some success. One thing Trump does is he fights. In fact, I had a podcast or a radio program here on the American Family Radio Network a couple of weeks ago. Why did evangelicals vote for Trump? And I had five reasons there, and that's one of them. He does fight where other people don't. Now, we don't always like the way he fights, but he does fight. And some people are just frustrated and say, well, at least I got somebody up there fighting, you know. But again, I think the primary issue here, and I'm going to talk about this because I got some email on that previous radio program we did on why evangelicals vote for Trump. And I want to highlight the people who disagreed with me. I want to put that front and center this coming Saturday when we do another program and deal with what their objections were. And again, I think the primary thing that people miss when they talk about this is, what is the purpose of the presidency? Why do you vote for people as president? If you're voting just for personality, for me, and you're ignoring the policies, then you're majoring in the minors. And now, let me be completely clear about this. I think the president's personality is important. I think it does set a tone. And that's one of the reasons I have some trouble with President Trump, because I think so many times he is coarse and he is unkind and he doesn't need to be. But again, if I have a choice between demeanor and policy, I'll take policy every time. In fact, if I have to go to get some sort of surgery, and I have a choice between a doctor with a great bedside manner, but he's not a very good surgeon, or a guy who is a great surgeon, but a poor bedside manner, I'm taking, and you're taking, and everybody listening to my voice would take the guy who's the good surgeon. We'd put up with the bad bedside manner because the purpose of the surgery is to get the surgery done right, and that's what the good surgeon does as opposed to the bad surgeon. So to stretch this analogy a little bit, it would be, look, I'm taking Trump because he's a good surgeon, not because he has a good bedside manner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things from Romans 13 is that Paul not only says that the government is, and by the way, Paul says that government is a servant, a minister of God, and it serves God's purpose for restraining evil. It not only punishes evil, but it promotes what's good. And that's how you gauge whether your government is honorable to its purposes for which it was created by God. Does it promote what is good and punish what is evil in God's eyes? For Christians, that is an important part of why we vote for anybody. And that's why government is important. That's why I think Christians should be involved in politics, because government is supposed to fall into that range of what God considers good and evil, and promoting one and punishing the other. That's not overly simplistic, is it?
No, and the other problem, too, that we're going to have again, Ed, in 2020 is the alternative to Trump is so horrific when it comes to policy.
Right.
From their, not only their pro-abortion position, but their position that the government ought to even pay for abortions.
Right.
I mean, the complete radicalization of the Democrat Party is now complete, probably primarily because of Trump, because they've swung the pendulum so far the other way now. They're trying to be so completely anti-Trump that they're gone so far left Open borders, government paying for abortion. Now they're coming after a tax-exempt status of churches. At least one candidate did that, Beto O'Rourke, right. And the others tepidly disagreed. But if they ever got into office, who knows what they would do. And I had a whole program on why tax exemption is a good thing for churches and religious organizations, a couple of months ago after that came out. And so there are so many things on the left that are now just completely, in my view, anti-Christian and anti-good for the country, that what other choice are people going to have in 2020?
Right.
I mean, there's no other good alternative, unfortunately.
All right, Frank, what have you got? You mentioned something about Saturday, your program this weekend.
I'm gonna deal with some of the objections that people had to the radio program we did a couple of weeks ago called Why Did Evangelicals Vote for Trump? Because some people, I said, hey, write in and tell me what you think. In fact, you can write in right now, hello@crossexamine.org, because I want to see what you guys think about this. Why vote or not vote for Trump? That's what I want to know. What, as a Christian, why would you or why wouldn't you? And if you think you can't vote for Trump or you can't vote for anybody like him, tell me why. I want to know, because I want to hear both sides of this issue.
Right.
Because it's going to be obviously it's going to dominate the news cycle for the next 11 months.
Yes.
You know, who are you going to vote for? And here's one of the problems, I think, Ed and Fred and Walker. People think that if an evangelical votes for someone like Trump, that somehow he's given up Jesus.
Right.
When we make choices every day where we don't have an infinite number of choices. We got to choose one or the other. I get, you know, the surgeon example of, or the idea that you got some football fans out there. We've got football fans out here who would love to have a certain player, even though the guy's not a Christian and he's a terrorist off the field, right. Metaphorically speaking. You know, he's got 10 kids out of wedlock, but you'll take that guy on your team because you know the purpose of him playing for your team is to help you win games. And you'll support that guy rather than some Christian player who can't play. Why? Because you know the purpose of what you want that guy to do. You want him to be your quarterback, or you want him to be your running back, or your cornerback, or whatever, and you know he's good at that.
See, and now, so we Frank, make Frank, well, now you're meddling. Okay, now you just now you've just gone to meddling and stepping on toes when you start talking about football.
And nobody ever says, because you want that guy on your team, you can't be a good Christian.
Right.
Now, I realize there's a difference between the president and somebody playing on your football team. But we make choices every day as Christians, and we don't give up our witness because we make a choice based on the purpose of why we're choosing something, rather than, I got to have this guy of pristine moral character no matter what I do. No, there's some. Yeah. Sometimes you don't have a choice. You got to choose one or the other. You got to choose somebody who's going to get what you need done, or you're not going to get it done, but you got some guy who morally is a Christian.
Well, I can tell you this.
Ahead.
I don't care who makes my pizza to this afternoon, all right? I just want it to be good. I want everybody to go to heaven, okay? But mm-hmm. I'm not going to say first and foremost it needs to be a Christian if that person can't make a good cheese pizza with extra
sauce. Yeah, that's right. I'm not buying your pizza. I want you to become a Christian, but I'm not buying your pizza unless it's good.
That's right. All right, Frank. Hey, thank you. Folks can turn in to hear Dr. Frank Turek this weekend. Saturdays, cross-examine. Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central. Sundays at 4 p.m. Central. Hey, Frank, we'll talk to you next year, okay?
God bless.
All right.
Take care, Frank.
See you guys.
All right. Frank just makes so much sense.
He does.
Yeah, almost so much sense that the question is, should we keep having him on? If he makes more sense than us, then
that's right. Our insecurity, it can show very, very easily. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for more of today's issues. Please join us.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues. And you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You know, most tours of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., don't include the spiritual heritage of our country, the Christian history of our nation, the people, the places, the events that God used to birth America. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. My friend, historian Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, goes with us on these tours, and he talks all along the way. He tells you about the people, the places, the events, and he does so from a Christian perspective. So you're invited to join us on one of these spiritual heritage tours in 2020 in June and September. We also go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour if you want to do that as well. So for all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, simply the website spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. Texas Governor Greg Abbott recently signed a bill into law that allows gun owners to carry firearms in places of worship. At the time, former Vice President Joe Biden criticized the governor, said it was irrational. On Sunday, a gunman opened fire inside the West Freeway Church of Christ, killing two parishioners. It was quite remarkable to watch what happened after the gunman opened fire. Livestream video shows that at least a half a dozen church members pulled out their weapons, and one managed to shoot and kill the suspect before he could hurt anyone else. You can see it for yourself at toddstarnes.com. In other words, good guys with guns stopped a bad guy with a gun. The truth is, if Mr. Biden had his way on the issue of gun control, there would have been a massacre at the West Freeway Church of Christ. Be sure to check out my latest podcast. It's a free download at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for OneNewsNow.com, and Walker Wildman, vice president of operations for American Family Association. Well, we want to welcome back to the program, and I've got to say, this is it. This is the last time this year I'm going to put up with Sandy Rios being on the program. I won't talk to her till next year. I've made that commitment. Nobody's laughing.
That's your New Year's Eve resolution?
Sandy Rios, Director of Governmental Affairs for AFA and host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard weekdays on AFR at 7 a.m. Central Time. Sandy, help me out. I was just doing the typical
last time this year.
Nobody's buying what I'm selling.
Well, I'm buying it, and I'm right back at you. I refuse to talk to you this year either. so there.
That joke just never gets tiresome. My wife rolls her eyes a lot. I always thought she had something in her contact.
But. Well, they know that they say you're supposed to listen to your wives, Ed.
I know. All right. Well, Fred, we wanted to talk to Sandy. We drag her into this program because we want her expertise. No matter what she's doing, she's going to drop what she's doing and bring her expertise in because we need experts. I think we've freely admitted here that we're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. I admit that for myself. I'll just put it that way. So we want to
– We agree.
You agree? Thank you. So we want to pitch a couple things to Sandy and get her take on it. What do we got?
Ed, you are full of compliments this morning. That's all I can say.
And let me tell you, that's for the last time this year. I'm telling you, I'm not doing that again. No more.
All right, Sandy, of course, one of the big stories in the news over the last 48 hours is what happened at the West Freeway Church of Christ there in White Settlement, Texas, on Sunday. I've been saying to folks, so many churches on that last Sunday in the year hold a communion service, and that's exactly what was happening on Sunday morning at this church when this gunman walked in. He had they say he was disguised, 43-year-old Keith Thomas Kinuin, and wore a disguise, wore a kind of trench coat apparently, but then pulled out this weapon and began to open fire. But the perhaps the biggest side of the story to all of this was the security team that was in place and was able to take him down, the shooter down, very quickly. It all happened within 6 seconds. But we're finding out some more details. And one of the things that has kind of struck me, the pastor, the senior pastor at the church is Britt Farmer. And he is out there talking, saying he knew this guy. This shooter has shown up the church a number of times, apparently in recent weeks, and they've given him food. They've been compassionate with him. But he got very angry because he demanded money from the church. And the pastor said, no, our policy, we're not going to give you money. So I find it interesting because I know of churches, experience with churches, that they do this kind of thing all the time. People show up at churches and they're looking most of the time for money, for they say they need rent money, they need food money, whatever the case may be. So this is kind of another scary aspect to this, is that this scenario that happened at this church in Texas on Sunday happens a lot, in that people show up looking and they get angry if they don't get money. And this apparently, according to the senior pastor, is exactly what happened there in Texas.
You know, the other scary part about it, Fred, is that according to what I'm reading, this Keith Thomas Kinnaman had a really long rap sheet. Mm-hmm. The earliest that I have here is 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to do with weapons then. Mm-hmm. But the worst one, the first bad one, is December 3rd of 2008. He was arrested for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He was found guilty, and he got 90 days. That was it.
Whoa.
Yeah, and so and the rap sheet that I have in my hand is a lot of that. Well, here, September 12, 2016, he was arrested in Linden, New Jersey, for possession of a 12-gauge shotgun while he was taking pictures of an oil refinery. They said New Jersey police also found a contempt of court warrant stemming from an aggravated assault case in Oklahoma. But he didn't serve jail time for this stuff. He just was let off. And so the larger implication here, you guys, is just that the criminal justice system is getting, we hear a lot about criminal justice reform, and this is criminal justice form in living color, where criminals are not punished. And you know, George Soros is on this campaign to get state's attorneys and prosecutors elected to a public office who are really soft on crime.
Yes.
And we're already seeing this. So this guy had a long rap sheet, and yet he's running around. It's horrible, really, it is.
Well, you know, just to kind of drag in another issue here, I guess they're related in a tangential way, but the attacks on the Orthodox Jewish community in New York City. We mentioned yesterday that, and the law hasn't even gone into effect. I think this is a New York City law that unless there's an actual physical attempted murder or a violent assault, these seven or eight of these people who were arrested for their intimidation tactics and threats against the Jewish community didn't even have to pay bail. They were out on the immediately released out onto the street. And you know, Sandy, this reminds me of the Democratic Party back in the 70s, and this and into the early 80s. This is what got the Democratic Party. One of the things that got the Democratic Party into trouble with the American voter, for example, when Ronald Reagan was running, was that they were perceived as being soft on crime, because they were always talking about the rights of those who had committed crimes rather than the rights of the people who had suffered at the hands of criminals. And it seems like this party and the progressive left is making the same mistake, because a lot of people are angry when illegal immigrants commit crimes and nothing happens to them. And now you have these examples that we're citing. What is it about the left in Western civilization that wants to be soft on criminals?
Well, it goes back to the larger picture that I'm sure we've probably talked about. It's a matter of allowing and creating chaos. You don't care what damage it does. The end game is to take power. So if you've got a frightened populace who is being preyed upon, it really is to your advantage to have them frightened and off the mark and not able to prosper, because then you can ride in and you can sort of assert that you're going to fix everything, you're going to change things. It's part of the process. So I used to just torture myself, honestly. When I first started on radio, I thought, because I reasoned through things, that the left was reasoning through things, and I couldn't understand, don't they get it? Why would they do this? Why would they do that? You know, fill in the blanks. None of it made sense. And it finally made sense when I understand chaos is the end game.
Yep.
In order to take power. So
yeah, well, this New York law is a New York state law.
State law. Okay,
yeah,
good. Thanks.
And it's dangerous because there's no bail for the vast majority of crimes, even assault. There's no bail. So the criminals get out the day after they're arrested, and who knows when the court date is.
Right.
And that whole time could
be months.
Yeah. You could have someone who's assaulted someone, be out on the streets the next day, including domestic violence.
I'll tell you the community that suffers the most from this. Well, I don't have stats, but I'm just telling you, based on what I've read and seen and also heard from them, members of the Black community, where they live in city communities where they are predominantly Black, they are the ones who suffer from this because they have a lot of criminals in their midst. They're not punished. They're never taken away. I recognize the other side of that coin is that many Black Americans feel that they are targeted for arrest and harassment by law enforcement because of their color. That probably has been true, but it's also true that percentage-wise, Black men commit more crimes by huge percentages. And so they prey upon their own communities. And so I have had these discussions with inner-city Chicago Blacks who want there to be law and order.
Right.
They want the law, and they've not been able to arm themselves. In Chicago, they couldn't carry weapons. Good people couldn't have weapons. So you've got these criminals just riding roughshod over inner Black city families. And so I just want to interject that it's bad for all of us, but they're the ones that will feel the brunt of this more than others.
Well, let me just ask you one last question, then we'll let you go. And sticking to the theme, the things we're discussing right now, do you think it's also possible that if you are coming from a secular progressive point of view, and thus your worldview is rooted in Darwinian evolution and materialism, a materialistic view of human nature, that because you have no explanation for evil, you've got to substitute for that the belief that people commit crimes because they're oppressed or they didn't have a good education or somebody has, otherwise society has harmed them and in a sense they can't help themselves or they're acting out. I mean, if you don't believe in fallen human nature and a biblical view of evil, you've got nothing, you've got nowhere else to turn. So you say, well, these criminals have been mistreated and we need to help them, and that's why the left seems to always be doubling over backwards to help the criminal, because the criminals are actually victims. Yeah. Is that far-fetched?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. No, you are totally right about that, you're causing me to be more specific. Certainly, when it comes to the policies of the left, a lot of people genuinely believe that they're helping others by taking these positions. There's no question about that. They think we're being kind, we're being honest and fair, and also we're trying to, you know, help reinstate people who committed criminal acts. But the thinkers, the deep thinkers who are pulling the levers of the left are not stupid.
Right.
They're not, like, falling for that. They know better than that. They are using the goodness of the, if you want to call it goodness, kind-heartedness, of many, many people to create their chaos. Yeah. So, and they do that all the time. It was the same way in the 60s and 70s when the communists infiltrated the in the war movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, the anti-nuclear movement, a lot of really people who really just wanted no more wars and didn't want people to be killed from but they were taken over by or guided by communists who had a very different aim.
Yeah. Was it Lenin or Trotsky or someone who called people useful idiots?
Yeah. I think it was Lenin. Lenin, but I'm not sure, Ed.
It goes to your point. You have the people behind the scenes who are trying to create a globalist one world government, and they will use people's compassion against them because they have such disdain, even for their ground troops. They consider them useful idiots. We'll use this that's in their hearts to accomplish our goals.
Yes, and I think, since I mentioned this before, I think that that's what they've done in the black community. While feigning compassion, and then instituting policies that really are damning to the black community.
Yeah.
And they don't really care about the black community. That doesn't mean all liberals don't care about the black community.
Right.
It just means that the thinkers don't care about them. That's why they put Planned Parenthood clinics near their neighborhoods to exterminate their babies. Yeah. Yep. So these are hard things for people to hear. I know that, Ed. And yet I've done this so long, I've seen the pattern. And we've studied other world systems where totalitarianism and communism and socialism to its extreme have taken over. And these are the patterns. This is what happens. It becomes deadly. People die. And they don't care about their own people. I was just telling someone yesterday who's going to Cambodia this week. I was in Cambodia several years ago. And to make this long story short, the Khmer Rouge marched in Phnom Penh right after the Vietnam War. And the Cambodians thought Khmer means Cambodian, Rouge means red. The red Cambodians, the Khmer Rouge. And they marched into Phnom Penh, and the people there thought that they were liberators. They were their own people. They thought they were being liberated from the war, the terrible travesty of war. And instead, the Khmer Rouge turned on their own people.
Right.
And they murdered them by the millions. And that's where we got the killing fields, because they were trying to take power. And your crime wasn't even, you didn't even know what you did. They didn't like the way you looked. You just weren't part of the team, the Khmer Rouge team. And it's a horrible story. And really, this is where this all ends. It's horrible, and it's happened so many times. We know this is the pattern.
Well, and that's why it's important to study history and to understand where a lot of these movements get their mojo, and where they get their ideology from. It's just important especially for Christians to be informed about these things, because this is happening behind the scenes. We're not conspiracy nuts here. This has been going on for well over 100 years. And this is a war for the soul of Western civilization, and Christians better get cracking. So anyway, I'm going to get in preach mode, and that's not going to serve anybody well.
I like that.
Sandy Rios has been our guest. Sandy, we so appreciate what you do, and we hope that you and Bruce have a wonderful New Year's and a restful time, because I know you'll be back at it after the first of the year. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ed. My pleasure. Happy New Year to all you guys. And I do hope to talk to you in the new year.
Definitely next year, but not until next year, Sandy.
Not until next year. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sandy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Sandy.
Bye.
That's Sandy Rios, Director of Governmental Affairs for AFA. She is host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time. She is one of the favorites for our listeners for AFR. She does a superb job. Mm-hmm. Knows so much. She has been in so many places, mm-hmm, and experienced so much over the years. She just brings a wealth of information to our listeners, and we're thankful to have her on the team. All right. Listen, we have something from Tulsi Gabbard that I wanted to make sure we got in before.
Tulsi Gabbard. There are sources that tell me she did not get a Christmas card from the Democratic Party.
No, that's right.
Now, she's a Democrat. She's from Hawaii.
Hawaii.
And she's a bit of a rebel inside the Democratic Party. And she is out there. She's made this video, and it looks like she's sitting in a car somewhere. I'm not sure where it is. And she's saying impeachment, the impeachment efforts of the Democrats, the Nancy Pelosi all the other Democrats. She says we'll put Trump back in office. She says it's going to backfire badly on the Democrats. And she says it even probably could result in the Republicans regaining control of the House. So this is what she says. This is an excerpt from this little video. Cut number two.
Unfortunately, the House impeachment of the president has greatly increased the likelihood that Donald Trump will remain the president for the next 5 years. Now, first, we all know that Trump is not going to be found guilty and removed from office by the U.S. Senate. It's not going to happen. Second, the impeachment, in my view, will actually increase his support amongst voters, and it's going to make him harder to defeat. Furthermore, the House impeachment has increased the likelihood that Republicans will take over the House of Representatives.
So there you have it. No, she's not a guest on Fox News there. She's not a Republican. She is a Democrat. She's ex-military, very smart lady. And she is, I think, laying it out for the Democratic Party. Question is, are there Democrats that are going to listen to her?
You know, Walker, Tulsi Gabbard initially announced that she was running, I thought she'd be a more formidable opponent in terms of getting the Democratic nomination. But to me, it indicates, now she's got some far left views, but she does have a common sense way about her. She's a, you know, like Fred said, she's a, you know, served in the military. Mm-hmm. But it shows to me how far left this Democratic Party has gone, that she was unable to get much traction, really has been public enemy number one for the Democratic establishment.
Yeah, well, the Tulsi Gabbard's case proves that the left won't let you in their party. Definitely won't let you in a position of power if you don't toe the party line on all counts. And so Tulsi Gabbard has some, actually she has some foreign policy views like President Trump on U.S. military engagement across the world in the Middle East, etc. But she's not 100% on board with the left-wing agenda. And for that reason, Hillary Clinton herself, others, Joe Biden, have all gone after Tulsi Gabbard, and there's no way they're going to let her in anywhere close to the finish line when it comes
Hillary
to the Democratic
Clinton
nominee.
Called her, wasn't it Hillary?
A
Russian asset?
Yeah, a Russian asset.
I mean, that's just so far beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to what you guys are talking about. The Democrat Party today has moved so far to the left that someone like Tulsi Gabbard is not welcome. But there's a problem, and we're going to see this story unfold very early on in the next 4 or 5 weeks. The Iowa caucuses are going to be held early in February, may even be February 1st. And we're going to see how this is going to all shape out. A lot of people, for a while there, remember Joe Biden's numbers went way down there for a while. Well, he's back up. In fact, new poll out this morning, it's a Mason-Dixon survey that has him up. He is the only Democrat candidate up over Trump in the state of Florida.
Okay.
All the others are falling behind Trump. So, you know, Joe Biden's not out of the race yet, but he may have pulled off a Hillary Clinton. When it comes to Hillary Clinton, basket of deplorables comment.
Remember that haunted her.
Yeah, and then something else she did in the 2016 campaign. Remember she went to West Virginia and she told the coal miners, you're going to lose your jobs, guys.
Right.
Didn't go over well at all.
Right.
No.
Well, Joe Biden may have done something similar by saying, coal miners, they just shovel coal. That's all you guys do. We'll just retrain you guys to be programmers, computer programmers. So I'm going to play you that clip, folks. Joe Biden on what coal miners can do for the rest of their lives, but also a comment from Charles Payne. He's an economist, works for Fox News. So here you have it first, Joe Biden telling coal miners what they can do, and then a comment from Charles Payne. Cut number three.
He asked me toward the end of our administration, Joe's going to determine what the jobs of the future are. Anybody who could go down 300 to 3,000 feet in a mine sure and hell can learn how to program as well. Anybody who can throw coal into a furnace can learn how to program.
It's hurtful, though. It's hurtful to dismiss the intellect of those miners, the intellect of people of color. It's so despicable. In 2017, the average miner job was 100,000. Folks who work with oil and gas, those roughnecks, 165,000. The average computer programming job, you know what that pays? 84 grand. So he's essentially saying, I'm going to take someone making 165,000 and we're going to just retrain them.
Yeah. Did you hear what Joe Biden said? They just shovel coal into a furnace.
Right.
I mean, first of all, does he really believe that? That he's totally out of touch with the mining industry?
Well, he's implying that he wants to destroy and eliminate
yes.
the coal industry yeah. and the use of coal. We have a lot of fairly clean burning coal power plants in this country.
Absolutely.
We talked about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. You're just going to wave your magic Joe Biden wand and get rid of the coal industry and yeah. coal-fired plants that produce electricity. What are you going to replace those with? And then to be dismissive of the people who are working in the coal industry, it's not quite as bad, Walker, as the basket of deplorables comment.
Yeah.
But it is same kind of elitist mindset that we talked about Mark Galley, the editor of Christianity Today, having towards people who you don't necessarily agree with politically.
Yeah, and I think one big barrier here, and a pretty simple one, is the fact that there's really not widespread consensus, despite the fact that they claim there is, that carbon emissions are causing widespread earth-damaging global warming. I mean, that's not... We read on this show a few months ago about, you know, 100 or so odd scientists from around the world who say carbon emissions actually aren't causing global warming. So, first off, there's not widespread consensus. And if you don't have widespread consensus, then there's no way you're going to talk the U.S. population and U.S. lawmakers into shutting down the entire fossil fuel industry, which is right. billions of dollars in the economy each year. And but the Democrats don't learn, because Hillary Clinton tried this when she told the coal miners, speaking at a coal mine, she said, "We're going to put you out of work."
Yeah.
She said that. And here is Joe Biden just a couple years later doing the exact same thing.
Well, it's not just coal. He has, as you just referenced, he's declared war on the whole fossil energy industry. It's not just coal. It's oil and gas as
right,
well.
Right.
Here's another cut. This is Joe Biden in recent days telling the world what he's going to do if he's elected president with the fossil fuel industry. Cut number five.
The third thing we have to do is we have to set sort of guide rails down now. So between the years 2021 and 2030, it's irreversible, the path we've set ourselves on. And one of which is doing away with any subsidies for fossil fuels, number one. Number two, holding them liable for what they have done, particularly in those cases where you're underserved neighborhoods and you know the deal. Okay. And by the way, when they don't, when they're delivered, put them in jail. That's what I'm not joking about.
He wants to put some executives of the fossil fuel industry in jail for things he doesn't like.
Wow.
What? There's some stats here that Chris Woodward gave me just before I came into the studio this morning. Right now, fossil fuels are responsible for 63.6% of the electricity generated in this country.
That's what I'm saying.
63.6%. You heard what Joe Biden just said. 10 years.
No, if I understood what he said, he said between 2021 it's irreversible.
Yes.
So whatever he's got to do, he's got to yeah. start immediately.
Yes.
He can't even wait 10 years to
yeah,
put the
because,
fossil
because
fuel
some
industry.
Because some of the, quote, more moderate left-wingers have said we need to phase out.
Yes.
We need to phase out our fossil fuels usage.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, if the world's ending in a couple years, then there's no time to phase out. And the
That's
left
right.
has said that.
Listen, that kind of stuff right there indicates to me that this far left push in the Democratic Party, it's not your daddy's or your granddad's Democratic Party anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The radicals, the nutcases, have taken over that party.
Yes,
and they'd have a hard time beating anyone
mm-hmm.
In 2020.
Yep.
All right. Well, how's that for good news? Folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news, and we'll be back with more stuff like that you haven't heard in a while.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.